hate everyone. I hate everything. I hate this week. I hate technology. I hate you most of
all. I hate having to talk to you for another hour today. This is like the worst thing ever.
2 times today for an hour, and it's going to make me punch myself in the brain having to talk to you for multiple hours. Ah! I hate it!
Everything about this week is the absolute worst thing ever.
This week is that Onion article from 2013 titled Jesus This Week. It really is. Calling the last 4 days.
2016 could be the year that we as humanity just say, fuck it, we're out.
Yeah. This is the lead from, this was the week when that fertilizer plant exploded in Texas. There was the Boston Marathon bombing. I think there was a mass shooting that week.
Probably.
Why not?
I mean,
there's a mass shooting
week.
Every goddamn week. And this was the lead to that story in The Onion. Quote, calling the last 4 days of American life just, I mean, talk about a goddamn punch in the gut. Citizens across the nation confirmed that Jesus this week, this fucking week, sources added, Christ. That's this week. That is this week.
That is eerie how The Onion.
So many weeks.
The Onion is basically just their best source for news from now on because it's getting to that point.
The Onion is the most sensible and most insightful news organization out there these days, which is really saying a lot about society. We started off the first time that we recorded this show today, which was about 4 hours ago. We started off by saying, you know, it's been a pretty terrible week in the real world, so why don't we just try to forget about that for a little while and talk some baseball? And then we recorded a great podcast, went about an hour and 20 minutes, and the recording didn't work because the third-party company that produces the Skype MP3 recorder must be run by, I would imagine, a handful of chickens in a goddamn hen house in Sri Lanka somewhere, and it's the worst program that has ever been created. So everything sucks. Everything sucks. We had a good show, it was recorded, an hour and 20 minutes, and then it just never happened. It's been quite the day, quite the week.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's just move the hell on.
Baseball, Colorado Rockies. Hey, welcome in. It's episode 79 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson, and it's been 3 weeks since you have heard our beautiful sonorous voices. Or at least my beautiful sonorous voice. And then Tyler's Mickey Mouse ass voice.
Mickey Mouse ass voice.
Oh, well, a lot's happened in the last 3 weeks.
Has it?
Yes. Last time we talked to you was June 15th. The Rockies were playing the Yankees at home. They won that game. And they've gone 8-13 since, which, to be perfectly honest, I am shocked by. I can't believe that they won 8 games in the last 3 weeks. It seems like it's been a lot fewer. But no, 8-13 since we talked to you last. There are 7 games under 500, 39-46. And besides that, what else happened over the last 3 weeks? Oh, yeah, I got engaged.
Poor Nicole. Rest in peace, Nicole.
Yeah. R.I.P. Drake.
Justice for Drake.
Hashtag leader. I got engaged, and then 4 days later, I went to Italy for 10 days, and I came back, and I was all ready to, like, I was going to apologize to Tyler.
Without Nicole, by the way, you get engaged, and then you just bail on your fiance and go to Italy.
I bailed on her hard.
What a terrible person.
It was a family vacation we had been planning for a long time, and it just worked out that way.
Just worked out that you were like, I'm going to propose and then leave town for 10 days.
Yeah, just to make sure that she still wanted it when I got back. It's classic Schmoesby. But then I came back. I was going to apologize to Tyler. Like, hey, I know it's been a couple of a week or so, week and a half-ish since we last recorded. Let's do a podcast. And then you were like, no, I'm going to go live out my fantasy of being like the situation on the Jersey Shore and just go sit out there and try to get some abs for a day or two.
I have never attempted to get abs in my life. I don't even need.
Sorry.
I know how wholly illogical that is.
Go buy some abs.
Yeah, I could wear like a costume with abs on it.
It's like when you go to Italy, they have in like the tourist shops, they have like
the aprons
with David's dong on it. Yeah.
I don't know why you'd want to advertise David's.
This has been more of an R-rated
I know, we're just like jumping out of the gate, cussing and pissed off. First episode, we were like, hey, we're back, it's so much fun. And then technology ruined everything for us, and the world continues to suck. Trevor Story lost the final vote. Shocker.
Yeah. And, so at least now we can have, we talked about Trevor Story, like, oh, he's probably going to lose. Now we can say he definitely lost the final vote. Yeah. No surprise there. He got third behind Starling Marte and goofy ass looking Brandon Belt.
Because it's all one big comical joke.
Yeah. And so it was the exact same order every single time the votes came out, right? Like each 4 days, I think.
Yeah.
Was it always Belt, Marte, Story, Lamb, Braun?
Yeah.
I think every time they came out with it. Yeah. So.
At least he beat Jake Lamb. Take that, Nicole. You have to be engaged to Anthony and see Jake Lamb finish behind Trevor Story.
When she listens to that, she is going to text me very angrily and go, hey!
She's so great. That's my revenge, though, for you guys leaving my Spanakopita in L.A.
Yeah, well.
You jerks.
Sorry.
You jerks.
It would have been looked at as pot. It's just like, oh, you're baking pot into this concoction and then taking it on a plane to fly into Colorado. Like a moron.
Probably.
They would have had to take it apart anyway, and then they would have eaten it.
Yeah, and then they would have eaten it because it was amazing.
Yeah.
A bunch of jerks.
Just saying.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Welcome into the show. We were a lot happier about life the first time we recorded this, and now...
Ironically, which we're never happy about life.
Now just everything is dumb and annoying. So let's get started with it today. Here's what we got coming up on the show. We're going to talk some Trevor Story. We're going to talk some Adam Ottavino. We're going to talk some All-Star Game. Talk about John Heyman's report of something that never happened at all with Carlos Gonzalez requesting a trade that appears to be totally falsified.
Clarification.
Clarification.
Yeah.
What I said happened didn't happen. Then we'll dive into the farm a little bit. We'll discuss Jeff Hoffman. We'll discuss David Dahl. We'll talk a little bit about the futures game. And then toward the end of the show, we are going to once more dive into some really cool stories that we got from some Rockies fans on Twitter and elsewhere who told us why they're based internationally, fans from overseas, why they decided to become Rockies fans. We'll talk about that in a little while as well.
Maybe we can trim the fat a little bit that we had in the first episode. The first episode went about an hour 20.
It's one of my favorite scenes in The Office when Pam refuses to patch Michael through the first time on phone calls because he always answers the phone like an idiot and makes some terrible joke, and then she doesn't patch him through, and then when she finally does, then he just says, "This is Michael," and that'll be us today. We'll try to get all of our crappiness out of the system in the episode that didn't record, and we'll go full-on professional podcast.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So last year, on July 8th, the Rockies were 14 games under 500. They were 35-49. Today, they're 7 games under 500. They're 39-46. A 7-game improvement in a year. Maybe next year, on July 8th, they may be 500. And I think we, as Rockies fans, would accept that, I'm pretty sure. Would you say that's correct?
I would definitely say that's correct.
I would definitely say that's correct as well. So, I don't know. The Rockies obviously have not been playing well. They won last night. Their offense finally showed up for the first time in a little while. They had that 6-game losing streak, which they scored, I think, a grand total of one run in 6 games. That may or may not be accurate, but it seems like it was accurate. For taking 2 of the last 3. So, that's fun. The offense came back against the Phillies, who had been actually very hot coming in. So, that was good to see that, you know, the two teams heading in opposite directions kind of hit each other and went the opposite way, like Freaky Friday style in one game. So, we'll see how they can go. We got, I think, is John Gray going tonight, correct?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so Gray Day. You got to appreciate that. But we're not here to talk about the past. We're going to talk about the future. And we're going to talk about Trevor Story. Because Trevor Story, as we just mentioned, he was in the final vote for the All-Star game. Like the third Rocky in a row who's been in the final vote and like the millionth Rocky who's ever been in the final vote. And every single one of them has lost. I'm pretty sure they've finished third, I think, in every single time.
I'm pretty sure it's soundly.
Yeah. But, which is no surprise, we conjecture that on our aborted podcast that we had earlier today, that we were, probably finished third because he came out third every single time and he finished third that way. So hopefully if Addison Russell can tweak a hammy over the weekend, Trevor Story will more than likely be put on the roster, which would be great. DJ LeMahieu also deserves being put on the roster, but let's keep it to Story right now. Trevor Story is having an historic season right now for not only a shortstop, but for any National League rookie who's ever been. Last night, 2 home runs against Philly. He actually tied the NL rookie record for most home runs before the All-Star break with Dave Kingman in 1972 and Albert Pujols in 2001 with 21. He's already gone past the Rockies' rookie shortstop home run record for the break. He's already passed the most short homers by a shortstop ever before the All-Star break, rookie or not. He's almost to the Rockies' rookie record for home runs by a shortstop. He's going to break pretty much every single rookie, shortstop, whatever record by the end of the season, should he stay healthy. He's maintaining about a, you know, really 35 home run pace right now for a shortstop, which is going to put him in some very, very rarefied air. And that's no pun on the ballpark that he plays in at all.
Coors.
But, hey, Coors.
Coors.
But he's all. But Trevor Story is doing things that we have never, ever seen before. And I think it needs to be said that if you're seeing a player who is doing something that no one's ever done before in a season, rookie or not, he should be an all-star. That is what I'm saying, because he's very good and he should be representing the Rockies along with his teammates Carlos Gonzalez and Nolan Arenado. First of all, by the way,
Arenado.
Let's do a quick tangent here, which is what we were good at. Arenado. Now, I have been calling Nolan Arenado for the entire time I've known him.
Yep.
Know that he was a person. Like, oh, Nolan Arenado. Because one, it's what everybody else said. And two, nobody ever corrected me. Now, when I went out to a wedding in Salida back in June, I was in DIA on the trains. And I heard his, you know, Nolan's the new voice of the DIA trains. It's no longer, it's been like Dante Bichette. It's been Wellington Webb. It's been like, I think Mike Shanahan did it once. I don't know.
Adele Arakawa.
Yeah, Del Arakawa, yeah. So I heard Nolan's voice, and here, this is Nolan Arenado with the Colorado Rockies. And I was like, wait a second. And so I had heard it like maybe a couple of random times, people saying Arenado. And I thought, okay, that's a little strange. Okay, whatever.
It sounded like pretentious almost.
Almost, yeah.
Arenado. Okay.
And so then he said it, Arenado. And then I was listening for it for Goodman, Houston, even visiting broadcasters saying his name. And they all kept saying Arenado. And I was like, oh, my God. Have I been saying this wrong the entire time he's been in the big leagues? And apparently, I have been.
Yeah, the good news is everybody has been.
The good news is it wasn't just me, right? So, yeah, you were there on opening day. You said you heard something then, right?
Right. So I don't want to be like the hipster guy, like, oh, I knew about this before you guys. But when I was watching the Root broadcast on opening day, I noticed they had, like, the players did the introductions like you do on, you know, Sunday Night Football, where it's, hey, Trevor Story, shortstop. And I noticed Nolan said, Nolan Arenado, third baseman. And I thought to myself, like, is that how Nolan says his name? Like, have we been, for the entirety of his career, have we all been saying his name wrong? And I remember back when I was in journalism school, one of our professors said, the way that you pronounce somebody's name is like the most entry-level gesture of respect that you can give to a human being. And you say a person's name the way that person says their name. That's why the Carlos Estevez thing.
Yeah, Carlos Estevez, season, Carlos Estevez. Yeah, absolutely.
When everybody got all over Goodman and over, you know, the rest of the broadcast team, Corrigan and Schemmel on the radio side, you guys are so dumb, his last name is Estevez. No, he says Estevez. Yeah. And if that's how he says his name, you say his name that
that
way.
Is his damn name.
Like, nobody would walk up to Anthony and say, your name is Anthony. Like,
well,
you say
Greeks
a name.
Do. Yeah.
I know. You have a lot of experience with the Greeks.
That's how Greeks literally say my name. Anthony.
But yeah, like, I just, you know, that's how he says his name. That's how he says his name. And so that's how we all say his name. And the people are like, you just sound so pretentious. And Arenado, it's Arenado. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
But yeah, I remember thinking on opening day, and I almost tweeted it, like, does Nolan say his name differently? And none of us have ever caught on to this. And I didn't tweet it that day, got sidetracked with the rest of the opening day stuff. And then, yeah, it came out. And the thing I think is really cool is opposing team broadcasters have also changed the way that they say his name.
Yeah.
Now they say Arenado, and you can hear them catching themselves to make sure that they're saying it correctly. And I find that really, really cool.
Which is good. I mean, you gotta know.
It's very respectful of them.
Yeah. So anyway, back to Trevor Story, who is a much easier name to pronounce, unless it's Trevor Story. But he is not a Coors Field creation, as everyone would like to make you think. Yes, the OPS is much down, but the home runs, he's kind of like Nolan was last year. He has 11 home runs away from home this year and 10 at Coors Field. That includes the two last night. So that's kind of how Nolan was a little bit last season. But if you're putting up numbers that literally no other person has put up ever again or put up before you at all, you need to be representing your team in the Midsummer Classic. And I think it's even more impressive that even after that first week that Trevor Story had, where he set the world on fire, hit like, you know, 12 home runs in the first two games, that I may be exaggerating that like a little bit, but it was kind of like that. He, like, everyone expected him to die. Keith Law expected him to die because Keith Law is a miserable human being who just hates baseball. And then he's is a goddamn masochist.
He hates everything. Except for pies.
Like he loves pies, and he loves his own smug sense of self-satisfaction.
Yeah, exactly. Those are his two favorite things.
Two favorite things in the entire world. But yes, of course, he had that great April, OPS over 1,000, only a 261, but had a lot of strikeouts. But everyone thought after that, oh, he'd be a Chris Shelton, or he would be one of those like Mark Reynolds like 4 years ago, where he just like hit a lot of home runs in the first month and then died. But really, he kind of came back down to earth in May, only hit four home runs, hit 259, OPS 769. June was one of his best months. He hit 284, he OPS'd 893, he had five home runs, he cut down on his strikeouts from 39 to 28 from the previous month. He's learning how to be a big leaguer. He's never played in the major leagues before this year. And I think it's even more impressive. He wouldn't even have made the team if some douchebag wouldn't have beat his wife over Halloween last year in Hawaii. So,
yeah.
And I'm glad we're rid of Jose Reyes. My God. Like,
I know. And that was the last episode that we recorded was right after that.
Yeah. So it's amazing what he has done this year, considering he came into camp thinking, man, I'll try to fight for a job, but I'm going to be, in Albuquerque again this year, just try to wait for my time. And he got his chance I think it was one of the last few days where he realized he was going to be the starting shortstop in camp, and Walt called him into his office, and he has done nothing but impress so far. He's been having an historic season. Sure, he strikes out a lot. He absolutely does. But he is contributing in so many ways that there's no reason why he should be still stuck at home during the All-Star break.
He's an All-Star.
Yes.
It's just that
Corey Seager should be an All-Star too. I absolutely agree with that. Aledmys Diaz has a great case too. And when Matt Carpenter was injured, they took his teammate, probably deserved it too. Trevor Story should be an All-Star as well.
Yeah. And, every year we rail on it's a dumb popularity contest and whatever. It's not going to change. It's stupid. Yes. But
it's time
Trevor Story's an All-Star. Trevor Story should be an All-Star. Trevor Story's numbers suggest he's an All-Star. The way he's played this year suggests he's an All-Star. That's not going to go on the back of his baseball card, but this first half of the season is as good as anything that we've seen from a rookie in Rockies history. And the thing that's impressive, like Anthony said, he's learning how to be a major league hitter now. Strikeouts were down last month. Averages up last month. He's starting to put together a more complete approach at the plate. And that's from a guy who the process that he put together for the first couple of months of this season looked like it would not be surpassed in any way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, this is how good he looks last month. Like he's becoming a more complete player now.
Yeah. The Rockies rookie record for home runs is 28 by Willian Rosario in 2012. He already has 21 through 78 games.
That's pretty damn good.
Only guys ahead of him are Willian, Todd Helton at 25 in 1998, and Tulo at 24 in 2007. That's it.
Pretty
good.
Pretty good. Final vote's dumb. The other voting is dumb. The entire Cubs infield does not deserve to be starting. Yeah, Anthony Rizzo does. Ben Zobrist has been great. Chris Bryant has been great. Addison Russell in no way deserves to be the starting shortstop.
Starting shortstop.
For the National League. But, that's what happens.
And those guys should all be starters minus Chris Bryant. They should all, or minus Addison Russell. They should all be at least on the team, of course. But Chris Bryant has played more games in the outfield this year than he has at third base. I mean, he's played 50 games in the outfield. He's played one at short, a couple at first. He's played more games not at third base than he has at third base.
It's dumb. It's all dumb. But, there's still time. Somebody could drop out with a hangnail or shin splints or something weird.
Literally, DJ LeMahieu started the All-Star game last year.
Yeah.
Because of an injury. So he's already on the All-Star team, obviously, but he started because of an injury. So a lot of things can happen in the next few days. And I would imagine there's be a good chance that he can do that. So we'll see.
So all that matters is Trevor Story's been awesome, and he continues to get better for your Colorado Rockies. But elsewhere around the National League, some news. Carlos Gonzalez will take part in the Home Run Derby. National League All-Star Carlos Gonzalez will take part in the Home Run Derby. What are your thoughts on that? Cargo this year, obviously a very good season. We'll talk about some of the news that came out about him this week that wasn't actually news. Kind of a quiet All-Star appearance. I don't think any of us expected Cargo to make it. He does, thanks to the votes of his peers, which, again, did not make Keith Law happy. But being in the Home Run Derby is interesting for Cargo.
Yeah, I mean, the last time, I guess the only time the Rockies have actually had a player in the finals of the Home Run Derby, because Rockies can't hit home runs outside of Coors Field, was Larry Walker in 1997 in Cleveland, where he ended up losing to Tino Martinez in the finals of that home run derby. And then the following day, he then put on his helmet backward and took a couple of hacks right-handed against Randy Johnson.
That was today. That was this day that year.
This day, 1997, yes.
Bad today.
Yeah. How about that? So, I mean, the Rockies really haven't had a lot of success in the home run derby. The last time they had a guy even make the semis was 2013 when Michael Kadir, of all people, made the semis of the home run derby.
The Cuddy Man can.
Oh my God, that is the worst thing ever.
It was the worst. Of all the things, that was the worst.
Of all the ever things. Even the stuff that happened this week, that was the worst.
That one was so bad. So bad.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
But anyway. So, I mean, Carlos Gonzalez hasn't had the most success in Petco Park. We ran that earlier. Like, oh yeah. So earlier we ran the first episode of the podcast today. Tyler was like, oh yeah, Carlos Gonzalez, he's been pretty good in Petco Park.
Been good at Petco Park.
Yeah, he's been really, really good.
And then you kind of remember,
and it looks up the numbers.
Nobody has been good at Petco Park ever.
And he's slashed .255, .319, .396.
Which isn't
Petco
terrible.
Park. It's a 715
OPS.
Petco
Park is like, okay, it's not bad. But yeah, no, Petco Park, nobody's good.
No, in 51 games, he has 6 home runs. But he'll be facing off with Todd Frazier, the fake Todd father. Because that guy
sucked.
He won
last year, by the way.
He won last year. And I was at that home run derby.
And
it was awesome. It was like probably the coolest moment of the entire All-Star weekend. Because obviously hometown guy, they were very a pro Todd Frazier crowd. And the way that the home run derby was set up last year, they changed the format this year with the clock and everything. Like, it was kind of done on a walk-off. And it was like beating the clock. He beat the buzzer with a homer. And
yeah,
the place went
really nuts. Cool.
Like, it was one of like the most like chill inducing moments I've ever been at, like at a baseball game before. And it was a home run derby. It was the dumbest thing ever, but it was fantastic. And so if they can figure that out again this year, that's great. But I hope that Carlos Gonzalez beats the brains of Todd Frazier in the first round and then rips off his jersey to show a picture of Todd Helton that says, this is
old Todd,
this is the real
t-shirts.
Todd father.
Yeah. That would be fantastic.
That would be awesome. If he just owns Todd Frazier with the real the OG Todd father, and it's got like Todd Helton on the back, like sipping from a red igloo cup,
like the tea lizard.
Yeah, exactly. But that's none of my business.
That's none of my business. Yeah, I and this is something that we discussed in the first edition that we recorded also. But there are guys in this home run derby who are not all stars.
Yeah, what do you think about that? I mean, it's Yoenis Cespedes won a couple of years ago.
Right.
When he wasn't an all-star, he actually defended his title, I believe, that year in New York. This year, it's only Giancarlo Stanton, who's obviously one of the best home run hitters in all of baseball, has had a pretty bad year, but he's maybe starting to turn around a little bit. And then Frazier. Those two guys are not actual all-stars, but in the home run derby. It's a little strange, in my opinion.
I think it's, I agree that it's strange. I think it's cool that the defending champ gets invited back. Like, I feel like that should always be a thing.
Sure.
But to me, you know, on my initial first blush reaction to it is like, well, if you didn't make the All-Star game, I don't think you should be in the home run derby. But then I think about it and I think, no, I really just want to watch dudes mash gigantic dingers for the home run derby. That's really all I care about in the home run derby. I don't care if you're an All-Star.
Big swinging dongers.
Yeah, just big giant swinging dongs. That's what I want in the home run derby. I don't care. To be honest, I wish they could just promote Joey Gallo for the home run derby and just let him go rake.
Only for
the home run derby.
Just bring up Joey Gallo just for this.
He's already the most powerful guy in baseball. I don't care that he's a AAA. Just let Joey Gallo mash in the home run derby.
Yeah.
Beat everybody's skulls in and take home a home run derby crown. But yeah, like, I want Stanton there. I want all these big power guys there.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. I don't know. Like, yes, of course, a home run derby would be incomplete without a guy like Giancarlo Stanton. But at the same time, guys turn it down now. Mike Trout doesn't want to do it. Chris Bryant turned it down this year after last year when he participated in it, said it wore him out. Like, Bryce Harper won't do it until the All-Star game is in Washington in 2018. It's like LeBron in the slam dunk contest. That's pretty much what it is. Like, you want the guys who are clearly going to be the best at doing it, but like, oh, I don't want to do it. I'll throw my swing off. Or, oh, I don't want to get, you know, I don't want my numbers to go down the second half. Like, well, yeah, but if you're a professional athlete, if you get everything thrown out of whack by 45 minutes of swinging a baseball bat a lot, then man, I don't think that's true. I think it's more of an apocryphal story that it gets handed down. It's like an urban legend. Like, oh, if you do the home run derby, your numbers will go down in the second half.
We can all blame Bobby Abreu.
Yeah, that. Pretty much. And that's basically what it is. Like, oh, your numbers have been dead in the second half for 10 years. Like, because it, like it happened last year to Todd Frazier. And Frazier was absolute horse shit in the second half last year after having a great first half. I think he OPS like 6-something in the second half last year. Jock Peterson, also terrible. He had 20 home runs in the first half, had 6 in the second. But I ran the numbers yesterday for Whip Around. And I think of the 8 participants, I think 5 of them actually had better home run rates in the second half last year, the ones who went actually in a home run derby. So, yeah, 2 guys really sucked. But most of the players who did that home run derby last year, especially in the new format, they were totally fine. So, or better. I don't know.
There was a study done by Yahoo Sports last year, and there's a really good story up at Hardball Talk today in which Craig Calcaterra cites this study that in the last 16 home run derbies, the winner of the home run derby has gone on to improve his home run totals in the second half 9 times. 9 times.
9 times.
So, yeah, the numbers don't really bear out the whole, it screws me up. But what I think that does is it gives guys a convenient excuse to say, I don't want to do it. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that's why, I think you want a guy like Giancarlo Stanton in there. I'm glad he did it. But I don't know. I want to see the best home run hitters do it. I want Adam Dunn to come out of retirement and take the home run derby,
some
you know?
Mark Reynolds.
Yeah.
Why not put him in there?
Like, they might swing and miss, and that'd be even funnier. I don't know.
Would be pretty great.
What if Adam Dunn took a walk?
Well, it's the only thing he knows how to do other than swing the bat and miss and hit 900-foot dong.
That's what I'm saying. Get Jim Tomei back in there and do it.
That'd be cool. I'd be down.
Yeah.
I'd be down.
But it's like, that's just for the celebrity softball game on Sunday after the Futures game.
Yeah, true.
Jim celebrity, Tomei, like.
That'd be fun to watch.
What canceled USA show are these celebrities going to be on there? Yeah. A celebrity softball game on Sunday.
Welcome as we bring in the cast of Silk Stockings from USA.
Remember this girl from La Femme Nikita? Yeah, she's going to be in the celebrity softball game.
Oh, man. So,
remember last year it was like, they had celebrities from that area. So last year it was like Nick Lachey. It was like the biggest Cincinnati celebrity like ever. Yeah. It's like, great. Just get Lonnie Anderson from WKRP Cincinnati in there. Like, at least it's San Diego this year, so it's going to be a little bit better because, you know, better pool to draw from more than likely.
True. What do you want to bet we got a Ron Burgundy impression from somebody?
It'll
be like,
I bet that's never going to happen.
Terrible.
Oh, my God. Thank God this is his last one.
It'll be awful. So basically, Trevor Story should have been there. Cargo will be there.
Trevor
and it'll
Story
be
should be the home run derby. My God.
Yeah, exactly. Trevor Story, Corey Seager's there. Trevor Story should be there. The third conversation, mate, Nolan Arenado obviously is there, deserves it, should be starting, but, Nolan, another all-star appearance. He's a generational talent, and we're witnessing incredible things with him right now, which we talk about week after week after week. But the other guy who should have been there is DJ LeMahieu.
Yes.
And he's not.
Yeah, DJ LeMahieu right now, I think he's he's slashing like 336, like 398, 498, something ridiculous like that. I mean, as a second baseman. And we talked about this earlier today. But DJ LeMahieu he always gets the Coors Field crap on him. And, you know, whatever. He's hitting 388 at Coors Field this year. He's hitting 292 away from home.
Yeah.
DJ LeMahieu is not one of those prototypical guys you can put into a box and say, he is a Coors Field creation because
Unless
he hits all these
box.
Home runs. Unless it was a really big box that could hold
tall.
A human man, like a refrigerator box.
High pockets.
Yes. DJ LeMahieu is one of those guys who will kill you in every other way that Coors Field will kill you. He is the guy who, no matter the situation, no matter the park, no matter the pitcher, he is trying to dunk something into right field.
Yep.
And that is how usually you end up killing yourself in Coors Field. It's not the home runs most of the time. It is the little bloopers and bleeders that fall in. And DJ LeMahieu has perfected that strategy at the plate. And that's why he is a perfect candidate. He made the All-Star team last year, Gold Glove, great. That he should. He'd absolutely deserved it. He's having a better year this year than he did last year. He definitely deserves to be on the All-Star team this year. He's hitting 35 points higher with his batting average right now, 40 points higher with his OBP, 110 points higher with his slugging percentage than he did last year. He already has as many doubles as he had all of last year, which is a career high. He matched last year with 21. Already has that. Matches career high with 5 triples. He is one shy of his career high in home runs. He has 5. He's getting better. Better and better and better, except in base running, in every possible way. His defense is still sterling. There's no reason why he should not be on the All-Star team this year.
No. And for whatever reason, DJ just does not get the love. I think it's because, like you said, DJ beats you in the way Coors Field actually beats you, but not the way the narrative and the sexy storylines tell you Coors Field beats you. Everybody says Coors Field beats you because of the home runs. What it really does is it beats you because there's so much territory to cover in the outfield that the singles, the little bleepers and bleeders and dinkers and dunkers, like you said, those drop in. And DJ is the consummate guy at doing that. But that just doesn't garner the same headlines. And so for whatever reason, he gets so overshadowed. And I think it's just because, you know, second base doesn't carry necessarily the same sort of swag as being a shortstop, being a third baseman. But it just, it sucks because DJ is a very, very good player who deserves that recognition again and just isn't going to get it.
Nope. I mean, he made it last year, which was great. He deserved it. He, you know, won a gold glove a couple years ago. Good. He deserved it. Right now, he has the second highest OPS among National League second basemen behind Daniel Murphy, who is a very much a deserving All-Star. Obviously, we're not taking with Daniel Murphy. He deserved to make it. He didn't get the starting vote because Ben Zobrist did. You can only take so many second basemen. I absolutely get it in that respect. But the only guys with a better, only second baseman with a better OPS than DJ LeMahieu right now, Jose Altuve, Daniel Murphy, Robinson Cano. That's it.
Yep. Those are good. Those are good players.
Yeah, they're very good players. They should all be there. Absolutely exactly. Should all be there.
Exactly.
But.
So should Deej.
Yeah.
Our young, sweet Deej.
Yeah.
So anyway, All-Star game coming up next week from San Diego's beautiful Petco Park. And those guys will and won't be there respectively. But
I'll be there. I'll be
Anthony
there.
Anthony will be there.
I'm getting there Monday morning.
Which will be cool. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Anthony will miss the Futures game, which is coming up on Sunday. The Rockies will have 3 participants in that Futures game. One of them, Jeff Hoffman. One of them, David Dahl. One of them, Raimel Tapia. And let's start talking about Jeff Hoffman. Because the things that Jeff Hoffman has been doing have been at times jaw-dropping and at times very just solidly impressive. And at times, you know, he looks like a guy who's learned at AAA for the first time. And that is sort of, I think, the final corner that Jeff Hoffman needs to turn. Because what we have seen from him over the last handful of weeks is a guy who goes through the classic ups and downs that you would expect of a prospect of his age and his caliber at that level. Most recent start for Jeff Hoffman, not a good one. July 5th against El Paso, 4 2/3, 10 hits, 8 runs. He struck out 5 and walked 3 in that game. But prior to that, was pretty good. Went through a 4-start stretch in which he didn't earn a win because pitcher wins are idiotic. But his best start over that stretch came on June 19th at Reno. Gave up 2 solo homers of 5 hits. Those are the only 2 runs. Struck out 11, did not walk a man over 7 innings. And that came in response to 2 starts prior, really struggled against Las Vegas. 2 1/3, 7 runs on 7 hits. What I think the big key is going to be for Jeff Hoffman going forward is, can he once again show that he can respond to a really bad outing with a really good stretch of multiple starts behind it?
It's a little bit what we saw from John Gray last year, because last year the narrative with John Gray was that the flashes were there, but the inconsistencies showed up a lot when he was in AAA. Now, this year, it's kind of inverse a little bit for Jeff Hoffman, because last year John Gray was really good in Albuquerque, ERA under 3.5, ERA over 5.5 on the road. Now, for Jeff Hoffman this year, he's the opposite. He has not figured out Albuquerque yet at all. ERA over 6. And you can say, like, oh, well, that to me is not going to pitch very well in Coors Field. Yes and no. Obviously, Albuquerque is a very high up in elevation. It's a thin air. But it's the PCL is full of absolute launching pads. It's not like he's just pitching every game into Tacoma. I mean, on the road this year, his ERA is 2.45. That's 3.5 runs lower than his home ERA in 9 starts, that 8 starts at Albuquerque this year. So he's pitching well in hitters' parks, just not necessarily his own. And so that's why it was a little bit different than what we saw from John Gray last year. But I think Jeff Hoffman, he has to prove that he can come back, like you said. He has those bad starts. We've seen John Gray have those bad starts too, but he's been able to bounce back, especially at the big league level. And he's even within his own starts, he's been able to concentrate his bad outings to really one inning. John Gray always has one bad inning, and it's just a matter of how bad that inning eventually gets as to how the final line of his game is going to look. Now, Jeff Hoppen, in that game where his last outing against El Paso, he went 4 2/3 innings, but he gave up 2 in the third, he gave up 3 in the fourth, then he gave up 3 in the fifth. So those innings really did just keep snowballing on him a little bit, and he wasn't able to figure out the adjustment on the mound and get back to what he needed to do. So I think that's the next big step for Jeff Hoppen that we have seen John Gray able to do this year. John Gray he's done very, very well in in-game adjustments. That has been his thing, where when something hasn't gone right for an inning or a couple of batters, he has somehow figured it out within there without having to come out of the game, without having to, you know, be pulled by Walt Weiss, without having to have a trip to the mound or whatever. He can figure it out on his own. I think that's what Jeff Hoppen needs to get to that point to be able to be the kind of guy that we have seen from John Gray at the big league level this season.
Those are the final polishing pieces for especially pitching prospects.
Yeah.
We know that hitters are going to go through slumps. We know that too. But the way that pitching prospects are able to respond is so crucial for Rockies guys, because you know you're going to come to Coors Field, you're going to have a day like he had against El Paso. You're going to have a day like he had against Las Vegas. And that is one of the final keys, one of the final pieces of the puzzle that Rockies pitching prospects need to get figured out is how do you come back from that? Because you can't let that snowball on you once you make it to the major league level in a Rockies uniform. So I think we're going to see Jeff Hoppen, but I don't think we're going to see Jeff Hoppen, you know, in a circumstance where the Rockies are, oh, they're hanging around. They're 5 games behind that second wild card spot. They need a jolt in the arm, and they need to get Jeff Hoppen up. I think it'll be more, let's get it to the end of the season, very strictly enforced pitch count or innings limit or both.
Yeah.
Because, again, this is his first full season coming off of Tommy John surgery that he had in 2014, returned last year in the Blue Jay system before the trade. So the Rockies obviously don't want to burn him out. But I think it's getting more and more likely and more realistic that we'll see him this season and that we'll get a decent look at him before the year is out.
But what I liked about Hoppen, that after that first bad start against Las Vegas that he had, where he gave up 7 runs in 2 1/3 innings, he followed that with 4 consecutive starts of 3 earned runs or less, 3 of those with 6 innings or more. And John Gray this year, after his couple of bad starts, he had that one, his second start of the season against Pittsburgh, gave up 6 runs in 3 2/3. He followed that with 3 consecutive starts, 2 runs or less, 6 innings or more. Then he had that big blow up against St. Louis, where he gave up 9 runs in 3 1/3, worst start of his career. He followed that one with 5 consecutive starts, 2 runs or less, 6 innings or more. And then he kind of came back to earth a little bit over the last few starts, but he was able to put that bad start behind him and then reel off a stretch of really, really impressive pitching. John Gray's overall line this year doesn't look very impressive. The ERA of 4.81, but it's the peripherals that make you jump up out of your seat about John Gray right now. It's not just necessarily the fact that his ERA is so high.
I jump up out of my seat all the time.
Well, you do, because you're a jumpy person.
Seat jumping.
But that was my point with Jeff Hoppen, that we saw him have that bad start, then reel off 4 consecutive solid starts before he had his bad one again. Now, I think the next time out, we'll see how he responds. If he can respond the same way he did after his previous bad start against Las Vegas, Rockies have a good thing going forward that he can figure it out, have a short memory, and come back out and be the pitcher that we all expect him to be.
One other guy in AAA who has been very good at the baseball.
Newly minted in AAA, in fact.
Newly minted in AAA. David Dahl.
Who?
His first 4 games in AAA, the Rockies' number 2 prospect, according to MLB Pipeline, is batting .579 with a .1632 OPS. In his first 3 games, he went 3 hits with a homer, 3 hits with a double, 4 hits with 2 doubles. And then in his most recent game, last night, July 7th, against Las Vegas, he hit another home run.
In the Parker, in fact.
Very, very good. Yeah. Was it really? I didn't even know
that. It was in the Parker, yeah.
Killing the ball. Just killing the ball. David Dahl, this isn't going to last forever. It's, you know, Trevor Story.
Shut
out
up,
of the gate.
Keith Law.
It's going to calm down eventually. But I like that David Dahl has been aggressive to get himself started in AAA. He has not struck out one time, hasn't worked a walk. He's just been smashing the baseball all over the place. Pitchers will adjust. And David Dahl's going to have to adjust back. But a really encouraging start for him.
I mean, you just look at his entire body of work he's put together this season, and really coming in, obviously, he had the spleen issue, which, you know, he had it taken out last year.
When organs explode.
Well, when organs explode inside him. Played only 76 games last year. And so he's really had such a weird career arc so far because of the injuries, and that's been a huge thing for him, whether it's freak accidents or otherwise. He had the hamstring blowout that he in Asheville in 2013. He had the spleen injury last year. Most games he's ever played in an entire season is 119. That was between Asheville and Modesto back in 2014. He's already played 80 games this year. He played just 79 last year. But the numbers that we have seen him put up so far, his slash line between the two levels, 296, 378, 534. 15 home runs, 24 doubles, couple of triples. His about 2-1 K to walk ratio, which is pretty good considering he struck out a lot in the beginning of the year and really cut down his Ks after that. Also stolen 16 bases. I mean, those numbers are elite. That's exactly what you want from your first round pick that you're expecting a lot from. And this is first year that he has really been the man and been healthy and been told that, all right, this is going to be your team. You're going to be our number one prospect. This is going to be you going forward. You're going to be in the big league soon. And he has responded as well as you could have possibly imagined at this point. I mean, the only thing I have to worry about right now is because he hasn't really played all but one pretty full season in his entire minor league career.
Yeah.
Is he going to get tired as the season goes on, which would be understandable. Right. He's already more games than he played all of last year. You got to see what he does into August and into September, and maybe, who knows, if he gets a call up at the end of the year just to kind of sit in the dugout and realize that he can be a big leaguer. I don't know. We'll have to see. But right now he's showing absolutely zero signs of slowing down. He has set the PCL on fire so far in his first four games.
We've heard, you know, everybody talk about how they won Jordan Patterson. At this point, we're going to see David Dahl before we see Jordan Patterson. I mean,
Absolutely. Obviously
the 40-man thing is a consideration, as we've talked about ad nauseum with Jordan Patterson. But David Dahl, just a more complete player. And if the Rockies end up making a deal and sending Charlie Blackmon away,
or Carlos Gonzalez, we'll get to that
Carlos
in a second.
Gonzalez, we'll get to that in a little bit. I think David Dahl is the guy you want to see toward the end of the season. See what he has.
I mean, yeah, he's showing that he is pretty close to being ready. And right now, the only
service time, super two, yada yada.
Right, but blah, blah, blah. After all that, the only other outfielders who are on the 40-man that aren't in the big league club right now are Raimel Tapia and technically Rafael Ynoa. And I don't think we would be that sad to see.
It's a tough out.
Noah go. Tough out. Tougher than Carlos Gonzalez, for sure.
Real tough out.
By the way, Raimel Tapia is hitting about like 380 over his last 2 months, just FYI.
Pretty good. The best mark in all minor league baseball, in fact, since the beginning of May, or about the first week of May.
337, 382, 464 on the year, and 845 OPS. I mean,
that's good.
What does he have to do? I mean, he still doesn't get respect from a lot of people, Keith Law.
Yeah. Keith Law.
I just don't understand. Like, obviously, yes, because of his hit tool, whatever. He's a controversial figure among prospect evaluators. His career numbers are 317 average in the minor leagues. And that's...
Three, I don't know.
I mean, it's 30, 40. This is his fourth year stateside in minor league baseball. And his average every year, through one level every year. He's not played in two levels in a single year. 357, 326, 305, 337. OPS, 961, 836, 800, 845. Eventually, he can just hit, guys. There's no controversy about it. He can just hit.
Especially, like, doing it at that level.
Yeah.
You can't fake it at Double A.
He's not doing this in Grand Junction anymore.
Right, exactly. It's not the Pioneer League.
This is the Eastern League.
And he's doing it constantly on the road.
Yeah.
Because the Yard Goats, you know, are never going to be able to play in Hartford, apparently. Yeah. The doubting this season really has to kill off a lot of the doubting.
It better, man.
It better.
It absolutely better.
Yeah.
And it's also his best strikeout rate of his minor league career as well. I mean, second best isolated power. I just don't get why people are just like, oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You got to think that if he continues doing what he's doing, they're not going to wait long before he joins Dahl in Albuquerque. And if the Rockies move Carlos Gonzalez, if they move Charlie Blackmon, maybe we're starting to get that glimpse of 2017.
Okay, so let's talk about that now. Because John Heyman had, what would you say it was? A slight inaccuracy with a report that he put out yesterday. Tyler, if you were so
just
kind.
Just a bit. Just a bit. John Heyman, who, used to write for Sports Illustrated, CBS Sports, now is with an outlet called Today's Knuckleball. John Heyman tweeted out yesterday that the Rockies would be looking to shop Carlos Gonzalez around, and the tweet said, quote, cargo to go, question mark.
All lowercase.
Rucks are, just the letter R, improving a bit, all lowercase, but frustrated cargo with the C and the G capitalized the first time and not this time would welcome trade. And then here's the money passage. Recently met with brass. That was yesterday. That tweet came, to be precise, from at John Heyman on Twitter at 2:07 yesterday afternoon. That would be Thursday afternoon. Then, just a short time later, at 5:50, he tweeted, quote, clarification, while Cargo is frustrated and amenable to a trade, there wasn't a recent meeting. That's not a clarification. That's a retraction. You reported that Cargo met with Rockies officials and requested a trade. Then saying that that meeting did not happen is not clarifying. That's completely contradicting your first report. One of the things we talked about super early on in this podcast, the very first episode of this podcast, which has pissed a lot of people off in the Denver media community, is that this is going to be basically as much of a media podcast as it was a baseball podcast, because in this town, nobody knows how to talk baseball intellectually. Nobody knows how to talk baseball in depth, and nobody really understands the mechanics of a lot of things in baseball because it's not the NFL.
Yeah, you've definitely lost some friends in the Denver media since we started this podcast.
I don't have any friends in the Denver media. I work from home.
Yeah.
We've just gotten unfollowed a lot.
Yeah,
but,
well,
but when it happens difference. From a national writer, the frustration is people run with the first story and then nobody follows up when John Heyman says, JK, that never happened. I mean, Hardball Talk is the perfect example. Craig Calcaterra wrote a story. Yeah, this makes sense. Cargo's playing well. Rockies aren't contending. Here are some teams who could be interested. And then he never followed up with an update to say, oh, by the way, this story is totally false. Now, maybe Carlos Gonzalez has expressed through back channels, somewhat otherwise, somehow, that he is okay with being traded if the Rockies find a deal for him.
Sure.
But John Heyman comes out and says, Cargo met with the team and requested a trade. Cargo says, no, I didn't. And then John Heyman says, JK, no, he didn't, just to clarify. That's not clarifying.
Yeah. I had Cheerios for breakfast. Clarification, I had waffles.
I'm gonna go to the pool today. Clarification, I sat at home eating ice cream in my underwear.
Like, do you think
no.
He met with Colorado Brass? Do you think he met with the Colorado Brass Quintet to work on a new walk-up song, maybe?
That could be.
I mean, and that's what sucks about it for Cargo, that someone like in the position of John Heyman, who is, you know, one of the more well-respected baseball writers around, and he puts out something like that, and then Cargo, even if it's totally false, which it clearly was, Cargo has to answer questions from the media now. Spend like a full like half hour, 40 minutes, whatever it ends up being, answering questions about, like, no, I didn't actually say that. And so he's spending his entire time, we're supposed to getting ready for a game, answering questions about some lie that some writer told, and then nobody else will take Cargo at his word. They'll just take John Heyman at his word. Like, Cargo,
you know,
can,
what I find funny?
Cargo can say till the cows come home, I didn't meet with anybody, I don't request a trade. And people still say, oh, yeah, sure, but John Heyman said you did, so you probably did. What? How does that make any sense?
You know what I find funny, too, is the Jeff Breidich last year, you know, made the whole, oh, it's the media is blowing everything out of proportion. It's the media's fault. It's the media's fault. I am the last person on earth to jump on the blame the media bandwagon. But there are times when I see why people get frustrated in circumstances like this, because now Jeff Breidich has to somehow account for, and maybe there are a lot of shades of gray in this. Maybe there's a lot of stuff, oh, it wasn't actually a meeting. It was
maybe
a
like
phone
50.
Call. Cargo sent a text message. There was a candy gram involved. Yeah. I don't know. But now Jeff Breidich has to go back to that well of, yeah, there's a report out there. It's false. Even the reporter said it's false.
And
it's just dumb.
It's been really good the last few broadcasts I listened to en route that Houston and Goodman are going in on lazy journalists. They ripped Keith Law during that series in San Francisco. Keith Law came out and said that the players were lazy in picking Carlos Gonzalez to the All-Star team, even though he's hitting, you know, 319 with an OPS over 900 because, oh, didn't his favorite player didn't get in. And like, they ripped him for not watching Carlos Gonzalez, which he clearly has not been. Carlos Gonzalez is having one of the better years of his career right now, coming off the heels of the best year of his career that he had last year. This isn't an honorary title for Carlos Gonzalez. He absolutely earned his All-Star selection. And then this thing with John Heyman, they've been absolutely correct in going in on lazy journalism, and that's clearly what it is. But it's not the first time we've seen that with national journalists trying to cover Rockies baseball. It's not the first time. It won't be the last. That's for damn sure.
Now, all that being said, Carlos Gonzalez and Charlie Blackmon provide two very good and very advantageous trade pieces.
Absolutely.
Especially Carlos Gonzalez. The issue with Cargo, obviously, is the money. But if the Rockies are serious about, let's get a look at David Dahl, let's get a look at some of these other guys, you have the ability to, somewhat similarly to what you did last year with Tulo, especially in Cargo's case, to make a pretty big splash at the deadline.
Yeah.
So what do we think the line of thinking is there?
I mean, listen, in a vacuum, the idea that Cargo would want to be traded, the Rockies would want to trade Cargo, is fine. But considering, I mean, this team is looking for, I'm not even sure what, maybe a first baseman? That's kind of like the big need right now. They have third base covered. They have shortstop covered. They have second base covered. They got the outfield covered, whether it's with the guys that are there right now or with the Dahl, Tapia group coming up, in theory. Catcher, maybe. They don't really have a big catcher now. Tommy Murphy hasn't really progressed the way that they look for.
They have Dom Nunez, but he's a ways off.
A little ways off, yeah. He's got a couple of years at least.
Yeah.
But, of course, you want to go for pitching. I mean, that's all. Well, you always go for pitching, sure. But I don't know. If you can get a deal and a team to overpay, then you can maybe pull the trigger on it. I think Jeff Bridet should be shopping those guys right now with the knowledge in your back pocket that you have absolutely no reason to actually pull the trigger on a trade if you don't need to. They still have Cargo for one more year. And considering 2017 was the year you were trying to get back into serious contention, and you have all these guys almost ready to go at the big league level, you got another year of Gray, you got hopefully Hoffman up by that time, Dahl, Tapia, whomever. If you get to that point and you're listening to these trade offers coming in, which there are probably going to be a lot, there's a lot of teams who are looking for a guy like Carlos Gonzalez. There was last year, there is this year. If you can find a team to give you the moon, you can pull the trigger on that. But if they don't give you a package that's to your liking, you can absolutely say no. There's no one handcuffing Jeff Bridges right now saying, if you don't make this trade, by God. No one's doing that. That's not the case right now. And if Jeff Bridges, hasn't even encountered a single offer for Carlos Gonzalez, then you can fire him on the spot. If he's not listening because, oh, we love Carlos Gonzalez too much. No, if he's not listening, then he's not doing his job. But he is listening because he's not a stupid person.
Well, and every time the Rockies have had these conversations with the media, it's always been, yeah, our eyes and ears are open to everything to improve this team. And I don't think that's just front office speak. I think it's true.
I think we have no reason to discount Jeff Bridges as being...
No, not at all.
...being honest with us right now. Even if he's not saying, like, oh, we're not going to trade Tulo, whatever. If he didn't make that promise to Tulo, who cares? He's doing what he thinks is best for the team, and right now his moves have worked out so far for the most part. I don't know. The Parra signing was not great as we stand right now, but still got two more years of that contract. So, I don't know. I think it's... I think overall, it's been better for Bridges than anything else. It's been more good than bad.
So that all remains to be seen. We'll talk about that a lot more as the weeks roll on here in July. But let's move on to some conversation about, let's talk about Tyler Anderson. We were going to cover Tyler Anderson,
yeah,
too. The Rockies promoting a former first-round draft pick to the big leagues, and they have been met with, I think, vastly better output than what we expected. I mean, I think we thought Tyler Anderson was going to be good, but he's been historically good so far.
Yeah, the lowest ERA among Rockies rookies through their first five starts in franchise history, 3.03. And this is the Tyler Anderson that we had always hoped for when he won Texas League Player of the Year, or Pitcher of the Year, back in 2014. But he missed an entire year with, a stress fracture in his elbow? Like, that just sounds just absolutely awful.
Sounds horrifying.
But you had no idea what you were going to get from Tyler Anderson, one, anymore at that point. You missed an entire season with a stress fracture in your elbow. You never know if you're going to come back ever again, especially as the same kind of pitcher. So coming to this year, the expectations were very, very tempered for a guy like Tyler Anderson. And he started out a little bit slowly in Hartford, but then picked it up. But through his first five starts, he struck out 26 batters. He's only walked six in 29 and two-thirds innings. The whip of 1.21 is pretty good. Still has no wins, hashtag pitcher wins, to show for it, because he's received a total of four runs of support in his first five starts in the big league level, but
not exactly good.
No, he's also given the team length. He's gone at least into the sixth inning in every start, at least 5 2/3 in every game. He's only allowed three home runs. He allowed two in his last start against San Francisco, but that was twice as many as he allowed in his previous four starts. So he's not hurting himself. He's not giving up the long ball, and he's been able to get swings and misses. He's got the third best swing and miss percentage of any starter right now behind John Gray and Jorge De La Rosa. But that's the amazing thing, that he put in so much work to get back to this point. I mean, as a first round pick, there's already a lot of pressure on you anyway. And to really be almost knocking on the door when you were, what, 25 years old in 2014 when he was 24 years old, when he was in the Texas League, had a 1.98 ERA, won Texas League Pitcher of the Year, came out of a playoff start with his arm hurting, like, okay, we'll shut him down. You miss a whole year. You never know what's going to happen after that. That could be your career. But to put in all that work to get back to this point and now be doing it at the big league level and pitching in big time games and a 4-to-1 K to walk ratio, that, I mean, to do what he's doing right now is something short of remarkable.
The thing I like about Tyler Anderson is, you know, we didn't really know what to expect from him, I think, even in a minor league capacity this season. But he makes the one appearance in Modesto, two in Hartford, three in Albuquerque. Then after not pitching for 19 months, basically, he's in the big leagues and he's been outstanding. That's what's so impressive to me about it. It's not just how good he's been. It's how good he's been with really only 30 innings to his name since the end of the 2014 season. That's so impressive.
I mean, it's been three starts in Coors Field, too. I mean, he's got a 250 ERA and three starts in Coors Field. I mean, he faced Toronto there, faced Arizona there. Like, those are some big-time offenses that he has pretty much dominated in those games in a very much hitter's park.
So pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. Yeah. The Rockies have gotten really good work from him. And
you know what else is awesome?
What?
The return of one Mr. Adam Ottavino.
Woo! So excited.
Adam Ottavino, by the way, 18 consecutive scoreless outings. He has actually got a zero ERA in two consecutive seasons. Never been done before.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good from what the numbers tell me.
Yeah, we saw him come back.
Like Brian Kenny tells me.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. We saw him come back in that one game against San Francisco, got one out. Hit like 91 on the gun. He was a little gun shy, you could definitely tell. But then he came back in his last outing yesterday against Philadelphia, threw a full inning, finished off the game, got a strikeout, did hit a batter, but threw 19 pitches, got a base hit off him. But we saw 94, we saw 95, we saw 96 a couple of times. We saw that wipeout slider that starts in the right-handed batter's box and ends up at the left-handed batter's back foot. I mean, we saw Adam Ottavino yesterday. We saw the real Adam Ottavino.
The real Adam Ottavino. And he was such a 96.
I know.
You know, he was such a 98 before the elbow went out, and he said even
it's only a matter of time. Yeah.
He said he didn't think that he was going to reclaim that velocity, because it's been interesting to hear him talk through this process. And we lavish praise upon Adam every time we talk about him, because he's just such a fascinating guy. He's a really intelligent guy. Obviously, he's got the photography mind, a really smart kid. The thing about Adam that I like is he's so in tune with what's going on, not just from a physical standpoint or a mechanical standpoint, but in the intellectual side of the game. Talked last year about how he read stuff on Fangraphs about what the most effective pitches were that he threw, and he adapted his game to follow that model. He started challenging guys with elevated fastballs because he read how effective they were at Coors Field just by doing research outside of his own comfort zone. And that's Adam Ottavino, and that's awesome. When he came back, he said, "I don't really expect to regain all of that velocity because my elbow felt strangely loose right before it blew out. So I don't think I'm going to get back to 98 because that's not really how I was supposed to be feeling." But he was at 96 last night.
Yeah. So I guess he's okay. I mean, it's just so awesome, all the work he's put in, like, to get back to this point, and here he is. But I was looking at crunching some of the numbers about consecutive scoreless outings. Adam Ottavino right now, 18 consecutive scoreless outings. Actually, that's not his longest with the Colorado Rockies. He had a 20 outing scoreless streak in 2013 to 2014, which I looked at the longest scoreless streaks in Rockies history for relievers. And 33, Mike Myers is number one in 2000. But the list goes Mike Myers, Rex Brothers, Gabe White, Joe Bimel, Boone Logan, Javier Lopez, Randy Flores, and then Adam Ottavino's 20. Now, what do all those guys have in common?
They're all good looking. Actually, they're not.
Joe Bimel?
Joe Bimel, I liked his rugged, beardy look.
Okay, well, okay. Mike Myers was not a...
No, they're all lefties.
Not a pretty man. They're all lefties.
They're all lefty one-out guys.
Lefty one-out guys. So they're not in for maybe more than one batter. So it would make sense that those guys would have the long scoreless streaks. They have one batter to face, and that guy scores, then you really screwed up your job. You probably shouldn't have that job. So I put it down to right-handers. Right-handers are usually not one-out pitchers. They come in for an inning or more, whatever. You look at the right-handed relievers in Rockies history, the most consecutive scoreless outings. Adam Ottavino has the top two longest streaks
in
Rockies history. Behind his 20 from 2013-2014, the 18 that's currently going on right now, then Laskanik in 98 had 17, Brooks Brown 2014-15 had 16, Laskanik again in 97-98 had 15, and then Matt Lindstrom in 2011 had 15 as well. So Adam Ottavino, considering that the scoreless outing streaks, he is definitely one of the more dominant right-handed relievers the Rockies have ever seen.
And he's so fun to watch.
But now the Rockies bullpen is starting to look like they expected it to at the beginning of the year. I don't know.
Like it has looked for stretches.
Yeah, and they had a really good run there at the end of April through beginning of June. But right now, I mean, Jason Mott has looked pretty good this year. Boone Logan has been excellent when he's been in the games. Estevez has had his moments. He's got a lot of strikeout stuff. Jake McGee is back as well. I mean, and now you got Adam Ottavino coming in. I don't know, man. It's kind of what they expected it to be near the beginning of the season.
Maybe it'll get them on a run.
Who knows?
And then they'll get to a point where they're contending, and then they won't sell anyone off, and then we'll be confused and frustrated.
Yeah.
That'll be the dream. It's good to see somebody who's so easy to cheer for. And we talked about this on Twitter the day that Adam came back. When you see somebody return from Tommy John surgery, that's a medical miracle. And take that moment in and appreciate it, because everything that Adam went through over the last 13 months to get back on a major league mound is more excruciating than anything the majority of us will ever go through. And it's so cool to see that all be worth it. And you just hope, you know, you watch a guy ride out 15 healthy seasons and head into retirement with a fully functioning elbow that he never has to worry about again. Unfortunately for a lot of guys, it's not the case. But for Adam, so far so good through his first inning and a third back, and we could not be more excited to see him back on a mound in a Rockies uniform. And okay, here's what I think we're going to do. We are next week going to catch up with Bobby DeMuro, who I think still has some sort of tacit connection to the Rockies. I don't know. We'll talk a lot about Modesto, the Modesto Nuts. We'll talk a lot about them with Bobby, who's been doing a ton of stuff covering the California League this year and has a lot of thoughts on some Rockies prospects there. So we'll talk to Bobby next week, and we're also going to share a lot of these stories that we've heard from people, Rockies fans around the globe, internationally based Rockies fans in the United Kingdom and from New Zealand and elsewhere, about how they became Rockies fans and why they would choose to subject themselves to that. We're going to talk about that next week show.
Yeah.
Roll in some more stories, all that kind of fun stuff. And thanks for bearing with us on a day in which we recorded 2.5 hours worth of podcasts, and you're only going to get to hear 1 hour of them. But
glad I wasted 2.5 hours of my off day talking to you. That sucks.
Hey, it's my off day too, you jerk.
You're a jerk.
You jerk.
You're a jerk.
You're a jerk.
Look what you did, you little jerk.
Oh, man. All right.
Episode 79 in the books, unless we have to do this again.
Yeah. In the books, unless we got to do it again like tomorrow or next week.
I'll kill you if that happens.
Wow. Jeez.
I will. I'll come to your house.
Jeez, man.
Yeah. Easy. Yeah. Yeah.
All righty.
All right.
You guys enjoy the weekend. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.